course, we know the Bible speaks to every possible issue and area of life. And right now we're looking at a series of God's directions for home life, how our home should be ordered before Him. And we're in verse 19 of Colossians 3, which is addressed to the husbands. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. We left off last time talking about what is involved in the husband honoring the wife. We saw in 1 Peter 3 that it said that the husband is to give honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. And we started into that, and today we want to go further into it. One way we honor our wife is by not treating her like a slave or like a maid, but rather like a companion and a partner, which she is, and which God has made her to us. Well, what would some of that involve? What would that mean? Well, first it means that in love, we should bear patiently with our wives' sins and faults. If you look at 1 Corinthians 13, where we have love described for us and its various qualities and characteristics and operations, you'll find that bearing with sin and fault and imperfection is a very large part of how we show love in this present state in which we are in. Verse 4 talks about how charity suffereth long and is kind. Long-suffering and kind as well. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself. Is not puffed up. Doth not behave itself unseemly. Seeketh not her own. Is not easily provoked. Thinketh no evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. And then probably most directly what we're talking about here, it beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Bearing and enduring all things. That's what love enables us to do. And so a husband is to pass by his wife's infirmities. Sometimes we think it's honorable to jump all over them, but it's more honorable to pass by them when we can do that without harming our wives by not correcting them when we should. But to pass by them is an honor, and then we need to be careful not to broadcast them or spread what our wives do that are less than perfect to others. We're not to tell our wives' infirmities to those outside the home. Proverbs 19 and verse 11 it says, the discretion of a man deferreth his anger, or as if a man is prudent, he will put aside his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. And of course, 1 Peter 4:8, this is the verse that we often think of along this line. It's most familiar. And above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves. Why do we need this fervent charity? For, or because, charity shall cover the multitude of sins. Now, if you seek your wife's good, you cover them. If you seek evil, you tell them abroad. In other words, a husband should be as careful for his wife's reputation and her good name as he would be for his own. If you probably wouldn't enjoy finding out your wife's been telling everyone all the dumb things you've done or the bad things you've done, please don't do that to her. Remember, we're talking about honoring the wife as the weaker vessel. And so the husband, as the stronger, is to tenderly carry his wife's weaknesses for her sake. And if he's strong, he'll do that. You got to have broad shoulders Romans 15 shows that this is a godly Christian quality. Romans 15, verses 1 to 3. We then that are strong, and the husband is the stronger of the married couple, ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and that would be the wife, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification. Right, do you think spreading your wife's faults and sins is going to please her and be her good for her or edify her? For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me. And so it's an expression of love to the wife, even as Christ loved his church. Well, it's one thing never say something negative about your wife. You ever have something positive to say about her? In other words, it would also mean, as a second thing, that the husband should be careful to praise his wife as well. You notice in Proverbs 31, verse 28, her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. As far as I'm concerned, my wife's the best. Not to put anyone down, but I'd be happy to say that about her. Now, he should praise her both privately for her own encouragement, as long as it's not flattery and buttering up or puffing up or trying to get something from her, sincerely. And he ought to praise her publicly to her recognition. Her husband praises her not only in the home, but in the gates. A third way that we can honor our wives is that the husband should consider his wife his best friend and his closest confidant. And so he should freely and openly communicate with her and seek her input and approval in decisions regarding the home. He's not to act arbitrarily or independently and leave her out of these things. Notice in Genesis 31 we have an example of this with Jacob. Verse 1 says, and he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I'll be with thee. Oh, the Lord told me to go home. I don't need to talk to my wife. I've got orders from the top. No, he still didn't leave his wives out. He says, and Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And you know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me, and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. So he lays out the situation before them, and you go down to verse 14, and you see their response. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. So he got their consent. Now what if they said, we're not going, we want to stay around? Well, then he'd have to pull rank and say, well, God wants us to go out, I'm sorry, we're going to have to obey him. But he didn't just leave them out of the process. John 15, here's another example of Christ's love for us. Verse 14, it says, you are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you. Yeah, our wife is to obey us. Now does that mean that we just say, do what I say and don't ask any questions? No, and what did Jesus say? Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. Now, how do you treat a friend? Why does he call them friends instead of just slaves? For all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known unto you. As I've told you everything God told me. I've held nothing back. I've opened my heart to you. I have shared with you all these things. And he says, in doing that, I have proven you to be my friends. So it's not an honoring, but rather it's a despising of our wife to do things without her full involvement whenever it's possible. Now, the husband is the head. But yet, he should be willing to follow his wife's advice when that advice is of God and when it is good advice. And he needs to even be willing to be humble and accept her rebuke and correction when it's necessary. And it's often necessary. Well, let's look at a couple examples of this. Genesis 16. Now we have Abraham and Sarah. With the situation with Hagar, who had conceived a child by Abraham, and now was despising Sarah. And Sarai, verse 5, says, she said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. When she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. Now, she was being a little uppity and fiery here. But Abram said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. All right, we got a bad situation here. We need to do something about it. And Abram says, okay, take care of it. And she was put out for a time. Let's go over to chapter 21 again. Abraham and Sarah. Beginning at verse 9. Here, Hagar has returned, and she's born a son to Abraham, Ishmael. And this son was an ungodly man. And when Isaac was born of Sarah and Abraham, he was mocking her, which the Bible says was a form of persecution. It says, Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had born unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. So she says, this is what you need to do, Abraham. For the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. Right, he didn't want to do that, but because he loved Ishmael. God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice. For in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Boy, how'd you like to have God tell you that? Do everything your wife has told you to do. Well, that's what happened here. Because it was good, godly advice. It was God's will. And also the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. So Abraham carried out what Sarah told him, with God directing him to do that. One more is 1 Samuel 25. Here you have a situation prior to marriage, which was shortly after followed by marriage. You have David asking an individual named Nabal for some provision. Nabal refused it, and David was going to go and destroy him and his whole household of men. And when Abigail heard of what Nabal had done, she went to meet David and prevent him from carrying out this bloodthirsty act of revenge. Verse 31, you see the end of her advice to him. It says, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. But when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid. And he did remember her after God dealt with her husband and put him to death. He said, hey, here's a wise woman. I think I want to marry her. David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me. So he recognized God as the source of her advice. And blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou, which hast kept me this day from coming to shed blood, and from avenging myself with mine own hand. And he tells how, you know, she had kept him back from doing a very passionate and wrong action. Verse 35 at the end, it says, go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to thy voice and have accepted thy person. So he honored her person by following her advice. And we need to honor our wife in that way. Husbands, always remember, God has given us a wife to help and to complement us. She's not just a decoration. She has something of value to contribute. And she often sees things that we do not see. And that's the advantage of having two sets of eyes and two perspectives. They don't always see things correctly, but they often do, or see things that we miss. And so we should value and utilize our wives' contributions and not despise them by ignoring them or neglecting to pay heed to them. This is one way that the Bible says that two are better than one. A fourth way that we honor our wives is by considering them to be the very best wife for us, as the one who was given to us by God Himself. And so that means we should not be comparing our wives to others based on beauty or intelligence or age or talent or other mere external considerations. Proverbs 18. Better be careful about comparing, because if your wife does that, look at what she got stuck with. Verse 22 says, whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing, good, and obtaineth favor of the Lord. Favor. Chapter 19, verse 14, house and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. A wife came to us from God as a blessing, and He knew what was best for us. And we need to recognize that our wife is best for us. Sometimes we fall into the, you know, saying that familiarity breeds contempt. You know, we're with someone, we see their imperfections, and we start, you know, looking at that. And you see someone else once in a while, so they always have their best foot forward. You're not living with them, and after a while, you start thinking, huh. To the point where it seems that almost any other wife would have been better than our own. We can fall into that way of thinking. And we must avoid it by understanding that God makes no mistakes. And that our perspective is very flawed and perverted many times. And we need to honor our wife by making her to feel secure in our love and in our appreciation for her and in our preference for her above all others. Song of Solomon chapter 4 and verse 7. Thou art all fair, my love. There is no spot in thee. I see nothing but what is beautiful and wonderful in my eyes. And that's not blind love. That's true love. Finally, the fifth thing. A husband should honor his wife by trusting her with the use of the goods and with the management of the affairs of the household according to her ability. Now, don't treat her like she's incompetent or like a child. Even though she's under the husband's rule, she should have some room given her to operate on her own. And we know Proverbs 31 again, and verse 27 indicates that, where it says, "She looketh well to the ways of her household, and needeth not the bread of idleness." She's always busy taking care of the household matters, and she's looking after them well. She's doing a good job. So allow her to do that. Give her trust. And as she proves that that trust was not misplaced, give her more. Well, last thing we want to see from Colossians in chapter 3 is that Paul gives a direction to the husband that is in the form of a prohibition. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Husbands, don't be bitter against your wives. Now, this word bitter is taken from the analogy of food. And it's talking about a food which is unpleasant and so offensive to the taste. In other words, husbands, do not be lemons. And I don't mean that in, as we mean it for cars, even though it may apply. If we're bitter, maybe a lemon. But don't be a lemon. You know, your wife should not always be puckered up because of the bad taste she has from your treatment of her. We need to be sweet, not bitter. And so the idea here is that Paul's saying the husband is not to embitter, he's not to irritate and exasperate his wife so as to make her life miserable, unpleasant, something distasteful. You remember, this is what the Israelites were going through in Egypt in Exodus 1. Verse 13, it says, "The Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor." Don't overburden and crush your wives with too much that they have to do. And it says, "And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field." All their service, when they made them serve, was with rigor. You know how the Israelites cried out to God for deliverance from that fiery furnace, that house of bondage. We hope not to have our wives have to cry out to God for deliverance from our ill treatment of them. So, in other words, Paul's saying a husband is not to be harsh and cruel and sharp and mean and severe and sour and angry toward his wife. The reason that bitterness is forbidden, because it's the opposite of love. And love, then, would be likened unto that which is sweet. If hate is like bitterness, love is as sweetness. And so, if bitterness is the opposite of love, it can only be one thing, and that is hatred. And we're commanded to love our wives, and so to be bitter against them is to violate that command. And we know what Ephesians 5 says in verse 29, "For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord, the church." If you have a wound, you don't pour salt into it, if you can help it. Well, let's not be putting bitterness into our wives' lives. So rather than being bitter, then the husband should be showing love toward his wife. And according to Paul's analogy, he would do that by being kind, gentle, mild, and patient with her. In other words, he ought to be warm and loving and tender in his attitude toward her, not cold and hard and froward, as is too often the case. You ever notice men that turn to their wives and they can't even talk to them without a scowl on their face and a growl in their voice? Like they have no love toward their wife and even have to acknowledge their wife or speak to them, they can't help but show bitterness in their heart. That is a very sad but very common situation. How do we show sweetness? We ought to be amiable in countenance. You know, the wife can see on our very face what we're feeling. We need to be loving and affectionate in our bearing and in our gestures and in our interactions with our wife. Genesis 26 talks about this in regard to Isaac. Genesis 26, I want to look at verse 8 and 9. It says, it came to pass when he had been there a long time, and he's in Gerar, where there's a king named Abimelech, over, and he's among the Philistines, and he had said that Rebekah was his sister. This is Isaac. It says that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out at a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. Now somehow he was expressing an affection to her that is not seen between brother and sister. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety she is thy wife. And how sayest thou she is my sister? And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. In other words, there's some way that he was expressing that relationship that he knew, hey, there's something here more than brother and sister. And we should, wherever we go, let it be seen clearly that we love our wives and that they are our wives and we're married and we are showing that. Now, as long as we're discreet about it and not going beyond what is proper. Now, we've already seen how a husband is the authority in the home. How ought he exercise that authority? Well, when he commands his wife, or if he has to advise her or even rebuke her, he ought to be soft and tender in his words toward her, not harsh. Psalm 64. It says, hide me, verse 2. Hide me from the secret counsel of the wicked, from the insurrection of the workers of iniquity. Right, what are they like when they talk? Who wet their tongues like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows. What are those arrows? Even bitter words. Wicked workers of iniquity have arrows that they shoot at their enemies, and they are in the form of bitter words. Is that what we should be directing toward our wives? No. It's not. Psalm 141 and verse 6. Here's the opposite of that. It says, when their judges are overthrown in stony places, they shall hear my words, for they are sweet. Then a couple places in Proverbs we want to look at. Proverbs 15. Sweet words as opposed to bitter. Verse 26 of Proverbs 15 says, the thoughts of the wicked are an abomination to the Lord, but the words of the pure are pleasant words. Right, if we are pure of heart, as Christians are, our words should be pleasant words. And then chapter 25, in verse 15, by long forbearing is a prince persuaded. As we shouldn't be quick to react to things in anger and to speak unadvisably with our lips because we're provoked in our spirits. We should be slow to speak. And it says, in a soft tongue breaketh the bone. Wow. In other words, kindness and love is stronger than hate and evil. One more, a husband is not to physically strike or beat or punish his wife, because that is both cruel and despicable and even criminal. God has not given us direction or permission to physically correct our wives like he has our children. That is not part of our responsibility. And then he's not to blow up at his wife, at her every wrong, or he's not to cast her away when she becomes old or weak or sick or impoverished or has any other kind of reversal of her temporal circumstances. Why do husbands so often get older and the next thing you know, they've left their wives, they're finding a young girl somewhere? Why is that happening? Well, it shows there was no true love and commitment there. And it's usually the result of marrying for unworthy motives, such as physical beauty or ability or wealth or something on that order. That's not what should bring us together, and it certainly is not going to keep us together. Proverbs 31 in verse 30 says, "Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised." That should be what holds us together, our common fear and love for God. Well, the Bible warns very strongly in many places against the sin of bitterness, and it tells us that we should put it away. Well, let's look at some of those. Deuteronomy 29. This is not only a problem of husbands, this is a problem in general. Deuteronomy 29, want to look at verse 18. Here's something to avoid. "Lest there should be among you man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turneth away this day from the Lord our God to go and serve the gods of these nations. Lest there should be among you a root that beareth gall and wormwood," or bitterness and poison. Now, these are the fruits and characteristics of sin that we should not allow into our hearts and lives. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us how we should be diligent to avoid this sin. Verse 15, "Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God." All right, this is a failing of the grace of God, and it's showing forth sin. "Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and many thereby be defiled." Don't allow any root of bitterness to come up. It'll bring real damage and trouble. Notice how James talks about it in chapter 3. We need to become consistent, not sweet at one time when things are going our way, bitter at another time when things are not as we want them to be. Verse 11 says we need to be careful that we're not sending out of our mouths both blessing and cursing. And he says, why? "Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter?" Or should we be sweet at one point, bitter at another? No. Verse 13 says, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish." There you have what bitterness is really all about. That's its true origin, and it causes all kinds of evil fruits. "For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work." Put it away. Romans 3 talks about the unregenerate. They have a wicked and depraved heart, and it's full of bitterness. And it comes out of their mouths, and it's seen in their actions. Verse 14, it says, "Whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness, their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace have they not known." In other words, there's no peace where there is bitterness. And this bitterness and hastiness and anger does not show wisdom. It exalts folly, and it produces all kinds of chaos and confusion and harm. Notice how James 3 went on, verse 17, "But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." There is the opposite of bitterness. So what should we do with bitterness? Ephesians 4 tells us, verses 31 and 32, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking. All these evil results of the bitterness in our hearts. Let them be put away from you with all malice, and be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. If we follow that verse, we will not be bitter against our wives, as God tells us not to be. So the husband needs to do all these things in order to make his home one of love and harmony and agreement and peace, rather than a home of strife and conflict and hatred and division. And then our home will glorify God and be a source of great blessedness to all within it, even a heaven upon earth. May God give us such husbands and such homes. Let's close in prayer.